Welcome back to the Ojogo Bonito podcast, hosted by me, Jacron. And we are looking at the return of European football. Welcome, Mr. Ferguson.
Hello. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. We're recording this actually quite a while in advance. But of course, the college is on half term the week that this comes out. So we're getting this one in ahead of time to look at the Champions League, Europa League, Europa Conference League, and some other little tidbits that are going on.
Wow, European football's coming back. We've missed it, I'd say. Obviously, we've had the World Cup in months previous, the leagues, but there's something about European competition that is just sheerly iconic. From the Bale bicycle kick to the Ronaldo bicycle kick to everything in between.
It really is the Gareth Bale competition, the Champions League, isn't it?
It is, and time of recording this, he's doing pretty well at the whatever PGA tournament
he finished joint 16th in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Pebble Beach, if you've ever seen it, it's a fantastic course. It is so, so pretty. Like, it's all built around this lake, and there's this gorgeous, I think it's the 17th or the 18th, where you've got the lake running up the left as you try and hit a dog leg on the right. Oh, it was my favourite course to play on, Tiger Woods PGA Tour 2005.
See, this is why you should listen to Ojogo Bonito. You got Mr. Ferguson giving his golf anecdotes. Me, a total golf beginner, absolutely enjoying them.
Yeah, we've got our premier Europe scout over here, though.
Yep. I do like a good bit of European football. And let's analyse some ties, actually. So, obviously, squads have changed as well. We've got Milan against Tottenham. And then PSG against Bayern Munich. Now, Milan against Tottenham, I'm less certain about, because both teams going into this tie are not very good form-wise. Obviously, we're going to make predictions as well. So both teams are not as good as they would be when the group stage finished.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and especially this Milan-Tottenham tie is so strange because, well, both teams have such a capability to just go completely off the rails. Anything can really happen. We saw this with Spurs versus City. Obviously, for us, that was the weekend just gone as we're recording this.
Yeah.
But for you, of course, it will be two weekends ago now, who showed up and did Manchester City in. Not that that's as hard as it used to be, but still, Man City are a formidable team.
True, and obviously the allegations by the time you're watching this, listening to this, hopefully soon you might in the near future have a YouTube or cross-platform, but stay tuned for that. Something might result in it, but obviously with...
It'll take a long time,
So this I'll be well into my 30s by that time.
No, so this has been researched for... Goodness, probably about...
close to 14 years, the first allegations.
The first allegations were 2009, I believe, weren't they?
Yep.
And they are pertaining to the period between 2009 and 2020,
2018.
I believe. 2018, sorry, yes.
So that means Jose Mourinho would have won a Premier League title with Man United. But unfortunately, as much like we like to talk about our beloved Manchester United, Milan Tottenham, so... I'm not sure whether Pioli's still going to be in charge, actually, because pressure's mounting on him. And obviously, they lost the game to Inter. I think if we look at both sides here, if you look at Milan at the moment, matches, fixtures, this is just showing us Champions League. But I hope it showed us more. But it is going to be... very, very interesting. Obviously, they're playing at the Miazza.
I mean,
So
I'm looking at the Serie A table at the moment, and Milan haven't won in at least five. They've had three losses on the bounce so far. Of course, could change this weekend or last weekend for the listeners. So I'm going to get used to this time difference at some point. but all the same, that's not the kind of run of form you want going into a Champions League tie.
They're playing Torino on the... on the incoming Friday, so that would be Friday past for the listeners.
So Torino, as at time of recording, are 8 points behind Milan.
And Torino also knocked Milan out of the Coppa Italia.
But they are in better form than Milan. So, yeah, I mean, that I could see that going the other way as well, and we'll probably end up predicting that one when we do our regular show. So you'll have heard our predictions, even though we haven't made our predictions yet.
Yeah.
So you'll know whether we're right or not, and we won't know what we've said yet.
Exactly.
Oh, I love this. This is great. But yes, Milan, Tottenham. And again, like I said, both teams have tendencies to implode at times. Either could happen, really. However, I do think Tottenham manage it better in European competitions. I don't know why that is, but I'm less worried about Tottenham imploding and more just that Tottenham don't quite have the squad quality. But I think against this Milan team, I think they actually stand a reasonable chance of getting through.
I'd agree. I think they have more European pedigree. They got Tomori to come back. They got Mike Maignan to come back. Again, I'm not a huge fan of Milan up front. I think Rafael Leão has been playing off the bench recently. I don't know why. Milanistas can tell me more, but it seems a bit odd to me. Mm-hmm. And but I do think Milan have more quality than Spurs overall across the pitch to win it. So let's make our predictions as we sum this up.
So are we making predictions just for the first leg, or are we making predictions for the aggregate?
First leg and aggregate.
Oh, goodness.
We'll do first leg now, because then when the return legs come,
that'll be first week back. Will it be first week back for us? No, it won't. It'll be 2 weeks after that.
2 weeks after that. So,
Of course, because these first legs are being spread across 2 weeks.
True. First leg, Milan a favourite to win by edge. Let's get your prediction first.
Yeah, I'm not confident in edge this time. And spoilers for our predictions from last week, 2 weeks ago. But we both outperformed edge again.
Edge not having draws.
Yeah, it's really hindering them. I'm not. Home advantage is something in European competitions, I suppose, but I think Tottenham will win the overall tie. However, for this leg, I'm going to predict that it'll be a 1-1 draw. And then I think Tottenham will take it in the second leg.
I'm going to go with edge on this one. I'm going to go for a 2-1 Milan victory.
Okay. There you go. It's in the system. It's in the spreadsheet.
Next game, the Battle of the Behemoths. They've met before. It's Paris Saint-Germain against Bayern Munich. Now, this is a very interesting tie because Kylian Mbappe, as far as we know, is injured. Now, I think he'll be back for the game. And obviously with Messi, Neymar, Mbappe, Galtier's got them playing a really good system. I like Warren Zaire-Emery as well. He's a very, very good central midfielder. PSG, in my opinion, are the favourites. Edge agrees with me. But what are your thoughts on Bayern's recent, I'll say, resurgence? Because they've been drawing a lot of games. They haven't conceded many goals, but they draw a lot of games.
Yeah, Bayern have always been an awkward team to play in European competitions. They've been built on the stereotypes in football, and German football is always stereotyped as being very organised and difficult to break down. And that really exemplifies Bayern. They've got the fewest goals conceded in the Bundesliga, and by far the most goals scored. They've added a creativity which, you know, for all that I like to talk about, especially on this podcast, about how they miss Lewandowski, they are still performing fantastically.
Sure.
I take your point that they've had a lot of draws, but I still think they are a very, very good side. Do I think they're better than PSG? No. Do I think that PSG will win? I'm also not sure about that, actually. I think this could end up being quite an awkward little tie. I don't like saying it, but I'm going to predict a 0-0 here in the first leg. I think the second leg will spark to life.
I'm actually going to go for a 3-2 Paris Saint-Germain victory. My reasoning is simply, I think they'll have Mbappe back, Ramos might be back, and that partnership with Marquinhos at the back. I think Kimpembe's still injured, but Nuno Mendes may be back, Hakimi. I think in the fullback areas, the battle which will be very interesting is João Cancelo against Kylian Mbappe. And Cancelo is notoriously bad at defending. So I wonder what Nagelsmann will do tactically to defend that. Obviously, you've got Messi and Neymar, two chief creators.
Yeah. But don't forget, of course, Cancelo's got a point to prove.
Exactly. But at the same time, it's Kylian Mbappe.
So, yes, it is Kylian Mbappe. Let's never forget that.
And their records, Bayern have won all six of the Champions League games. PSG have won 4, drawn 2, and lost none. So, yeah, I'm going to go for a 3-2 Paris Saint-Germain victory on this one. Although, in a later, if we do have time at the end of this episode, actually, we will analyse, as per our usual squad analysis per episode, we will analyse the PSG squad and what they do need, as we've done with other clubs around Europe.
I think that may have to wait until Friday, because if we've got Champions League, Europa League and Conference League to get through, there's a lot of games.
Let's see, a lot of games. But what's your... You said 0-0. So
I said 0-0, yeah.
Right, next, the day after. Bruges against Benfica.
Bruges-Benfica.
Bruges are a tough team. Obviously, they've got Scott Parker now in charge.
Oh, do that? I didn't know that, actually.
Club Bruges. Or Brugge, depending on if you're Flemish or French-speaking part. Yeah, Scott Parker is their manager.
Now, interesting, you know, Bruges, I can't profess to know much about Club Bruges, but I do know a little bit about Benfica, because we've talked about them quite a bit on this show, and Benfica have consistently proven, as JK proves, that you need to stay hydrated when you do this podcast,
yep,
that they are such a tough team to beat. The Portuguese League, of course, is a different level of quality to the big five European leagues, but Club Bruges aren't in the big five European leagues. I think Benfica will walk this tie, and I think they're going to smash Bruges 3-0.
Wow. Bruges do have a few good players. They have Ferran Hutla. I don't know how to pronounce the name. J-U-T-G-L-A Hutla. They signed from Barcelona. He was a very, very interesting number nine, in my opinion. Let's get their squad up so I can see. They have Dennis Odoi, who used to be at Fulham, I believe. Let's test this. Yes, I'm right.
Of course you are.
Yeah, Ferran Hutla. They got Noah Lang, who used to be at Ajax, famously fell out with Erik ten Hag over his attitude. Tejan Buchanan, World Cup viewers will remember him. Dedrick Boyata, Man City fans, you will remember him as well. And actually, this is a very interesting tie for a certain Roman Yaremchuk, because he used to be playing for Benfica. Simon Mignolet as well, for our English listeners. Obviously, former Liverpool player.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so this is going to be a very interesting tie, but I do agree with Mr. Ferguson on this one. Benfica will win, and I think they'll win a 3-1. They're just a very, very good side. And I think even though they lost Enzo Fernandez, the way the Benfica system operates is they obviously play 4-2-3-1, but their wingers are false wingers, because they've got Jean-Marie on the right. They play Alsners on the left, who they signed from a Norwegian team, I believe. Alsners. Feyenoord. And Alsners, I think, will move into the Enzo role. They've got Gonzalo Ramos. They signed Andreas... I do not know how to say his name. Andreas Schreldier. How do you say this name?
If you're listening to this, then please write in with a pronunciation and we'll write you back with an apology.
Schreldierup. He used to play for Norgeland. He's another left winger. He could get game time.
Yeah, I mean, the strength...
The depth is really good.
The strength of the Benfica system as well is that they're used to selling their big players off and then bringing in someone else who's been learning the system and just fits straight back into the system. I'm never really worried about Benfica when they sell a player, because they always seem to have young talents coming through who can take someone's place.
And speaking of... Well, actually, this goes against it, but in Portuguese, they've been playing Chiquinho, who's a attacking midfielder, as... next to Florentino Luis, who is the more defensive out of the two. I think that's more to do with build-up, etc. But Roger Schmidt's a very good coach. And ultimately, I think he'll prevail over Scott Parker.
Mm.
Simple as that.
I'm assuming Edge has Benfica for this one.
It does as well, yes. Forgot to mention that. My apologies. Dortmund against Chelsea is our next tie.
And this should be fun. I'm looking forward to this one. Because
the first time they're meeting in all competitions, their first meeting between the two teams.
Yeah, you stretch back and you start to think, hang on, wait, they haven't actually played each other, have they? But it'll be really interesting, this. The Dortmund team, who a little bit Benfica-like, always seem to have young talents coming through to replace talents who they sell off to other clubs, like their Lewandowskis and their Sanchos.
And Erling Haaland.
And their Erling Haalands, of course. And Chelsea, who seem to be buying everyone under the sun and then buying the sun as well.
Yeah, exactly. Dortmund have looked in better form recently. Obviously, Seb Haller's come back. They've got good depth. Karim Adeyemi's doing very well off the right. Julian Brandt's been in superb form. Obviously, Jude Bellingham. People wax lyrical about him. Schlotterbeck seems to be settling in. Let's see how Julian Ryerson will play against Mihailo Mudrik. Obviously, they're signing from the Norwegian, I believe, signing from Union Berlin, who obviously got Josip Juranovic from Celtic. Me just flexing my football knowledge at this point. It's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think this tie really depends on how quickly Chelsea gel. And I don't think they'll gel in time for this first leg. I think what Chelsea really need is they need a match against... Who's at the bottom of the Prem at the moment? It's
Southampton, right? Southampton.
I believe it's Southampton. Yes, it is Southampton.
Boom.
They need... Although Southampton have won a game recently, so maybe Bournemouth instead. They need a game against someone like that. If they had a cup tie against a low-ranking opposition coming up, that'd be perfect for them, because then they could play all these superstars, let them gel in against some opposition who can't really stand up to them. And once that gelling is made, that Chelsea team will be really, really, really good. But I don't think that they'll be gelling in time for this game, and I don't think this game will be the game where they find that coordination, because Dortmund are so well drilled.
The only issue with Dortmund is they're very vulnerable on the break.
Yes, that's true. That's very true.
And there's going to be a few key battles that I'd like to pinpoint. First of all, whoever's on Chelsea's right, whether that'd be Ziyech or Madueke against Guerrero, that'll be a very interesting battle. You're going to have Mudrik against Ryerson or any other right back. But I think the biggest battle is going to be in the midfield, and I think Dortmund will play Bellingham, Sally Özcan, I believe, possibly, and Marco Reus. So that's a lot of creativity. Obviously, Julian Brandt will also drift in. So that's going to be something that's very, very difficult for opposition, for the opposition.
I think Enzo Fernandez is a great signing. Putting the price tag to one side for a moment.
Yeah, he's a wonderful signing.
He's a wonderful signing. He will provide a spine to that Chelsea team for years and years to come, assuming they don't get bored of him.
I think he'll just go to Real Madrid at some point, or Barcelona.
Well, that's also very true. That could possibly happen. And if he does, he'll probably turn quite a tidy profit for Chelsea.
Exactly. Given the fee, although I think Jude Bellingham... Let's see what happens.
Yeah, but I don't think this is going to be a high-scoring game.
I think this could be quite leaky because both defences aren't hugely great. But I'll go 2-1 Dortmund. I'll stick with Edge. I'll go 2-1 Dortmund. It's at the Westfalenstadion as well, with the iconic yellow wall. Semantics do play a role in football. So I'm going to go 2-1 Dortmund. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm... I can't really... See, like I said, I can't see there being many goals in this game. If any at all, I'm almost... In fact, you know what? I'm going to pick another 0-0, yeah. I think these teams are going to cancel each other out to a large degree.
Fascinating. Now, arguably, I think this is the hardest tie to call. Liverpool-Real Madrid. Both teams in really, really atrocious form.
And you wouldn't have thought that when we got to the Champions League final
last year. And I guarantee you, if it was a couple of weeks ago, Edge would have favoured Real Madrid to win. But it has Liverpool to win this one, which is...
Does it?
Yep.
I think that's stuff of nonsense.
Yep.
It's Madrid. It's Madrid all the way. I think they're going to take this 2-0. I'm not worried about this tie from a Madrid standpoint. Liverpool, I think, should be worried about this tie.
I think Madrid have a lot of injuries.
Here's the thing. Liverpool have had some fairly easy opposition by Premier League standards, and they haven't played particularly well. And we keep saying, oh, this is the game they're going to bounce back. This is the game they're going to bounce back. I think this is the game they're going to get shown up.
True. And an interesting statistic for listeners is Vinicius Junior is the most fouled player in Europe. He's had 79 fouls against him.
And with the way Liverpool play, with that press that they can't quite seem to get right at the moment, they are just going to foul Vinicius off the pitch. And they're going to give away so many free kicks and probably quite a few yellow cards. And then, you know, and then they've got Vinicius running out defenders on yellow cards. You never want that.
Especially with Rodrigo, Benzema, I think Tchouaméni might be back for this as well.
Benzema against central defenders on yellow cards is terrifying.
It is.
Because you know that he's clever enough to just feel a bit of contact, and down he goes, and suddenly you're down to 10.
True.
I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if there's a red card in this. I think Liverpool could get a man sent off here.
I'd be inclined to agree. I wonder what the Real Madrid midfield is actually very off colour recently. I think Fernando Mendy's injured, but Camavinga's had a really good month at left back. That transition from central midfield to left back's been very good for him.
The thing is, I'm not sure it matters so much that that Madrid's midfield isn't so great, because I think their wings are strong enough that they'll play round
Liverpool.
Not
great anyway. So.
No, it's not.
I'll be dead honest. I'm going to go 0-0 here.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think there's too much attacking talent for that, but I respect it.
Very, very bold prediction. What is your prediction? Oh, you already went 2-0.
Yeah, I've got 2-0 Madrid.
Right, I think this is the easiest tie to predict. Frankfurt, Napoli.
How many goals are you predicting for Napoli?
I'm going to go... Frankfurt are all right defensively, but I'm going to go... Napoli got 3 against Spezia. Spezia worse than Frankfurt. Napoli got 5 against Juventus. Juventus were dour. I'm going to go 4-0 Napoli on this one.
Yeah, I was going to take 4-0 as well. I will take... You know what? I'm going to take 5-0 then, because I don't think it's going to be a low-scoring one this. I assume Edge has got Napoli.
Yes.
Yes, of course it does. Napoli, of course, the rumours coming out on the morning of recording this are from Napoli's owner saying that Osimhen's not for sale under any cost, under any circumstances whatsoever. So expect him to go for about 100 million in the summer.
120, 130.
Yeah.
And actually, Osimhen broke a Cristiano Ronaldo record over the weekend.
Oh, did he?
His goal against Spezia. 2.58 metre leap.
Yeah, the highest leap in the Serie A for a header.
Yep. He beat Ronaldo's record.
Have you seen the picture of it as well?
I watched the goal. I was watching the game.
He jumps over the keeper's dive. It's incredible.
Yeah, Drogovski got his lines absolutely wrong. And Osimhen's been on fire. He got... Yeah, it was Kvaratskhelia with the penalty. I think it might have been an Osimhen brace, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was an Osimhen brace. And he got a goal disallowed, actually, in that game. I remember it was Mattia Caldara, formerly of Juventus and AC Milan. Might be on loan, actually. And Atalanta. So Osimhen, left-hand side of the box, he shrugs Caldara off to the point where Caldara just falls on the floor. And Osimhen's off balance, and he just rifles it in with his left foot, but gets called for a foul for some odd reason. So he's robbed of a hat-trick there. But this is the easiest tie to predict.
Yeah.
Speaking of goal fests, Leipzig, Man City.
Yes, I like that you've said that, because it was in my mind until about a minute ago that this was going to be a goal fest. I actually don't think this one will be. What I'm predicting for this is a 1-1 draw.
Ooh.
Now, I'm predicting that with a future prediction in mind, which is that when they go back to the Etihad, or when do they play that return fixture?
I think sometime in March.
Yeah, I think it's the 14th of March.
Yeah.
When they go back on the 14th of March, and I'm predicting this on the 8th of February, I'm just putting this out there in case I'm right, I think Leipzig are going to do a smash and grab at the Etihad and get a 3-2 win there and go through. I think this City team are too complacent these days. And I think that everything that is going on off the pitch as well, all of this extra chatter, all of the rumours, of course, the quote that's resurfacing with the news of this City charged on financial, is Pep saying, if they've lied to me, I'll go.
Yep.
That, your footballers, you're paid to not think about that stuff, but that stuff's got to be on your mind.
True. Edges Man City to win.
And I'm not surprised by that, to be honest. City should win.
They should. But shoulda, coulda, woulda. I'm just seeing RB Leipzig's... I can't spell, actually, because I just put R Leipzig in.
Yeah, they're fourth in the Bundesliga at the moment.
I just want to see their results. They're under Marco Rosa, a Leipzig native. They do have a lot of potential in terms of goal scoring power.
Mm.
So
they've got the third best defense in the Bundesliga. I think that.
So you've already got a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I've got a 1-1. I think they're going to not cancel each other out. I think they're both going to get chances in this match.
I'm going to go 3-2 Man City then.
3-2 Man City?
Yeah.
Okay.
And now we've gone from the goal fest to the ball fest. Inter Porto. Now, here's what I'm going to go ahead and say.
Hit me with it.
Famously noted that Simone Inzaghi, brother of Pippo Inzaghi, the famous Pippo Inzaghi, is notoriously bad in league competitions. It's what pundits in Italy have been saying. But I'm going to go for a Porto win here, actually. I think Porto have no central midfielders fit at the moment. But this game is in 2 weeks' time. And this could mean Porto have fit central midfielders.
Mm.
And they do have the ever-present, mind-bewildering Pepe Aquino, who they signed from Gremio, who can play right back, right winger, right wing back. Maybe he's good at central midfield too. So I just think Porto have an Atletico Madrid-esque nature about them, which means I'm going to back them for a 2-1 smash and grab. I think Taremi's going to get a brace.
Yeah, and I see why you're making that prediction.
But Edge favours Inter to win.
Edge favours Inter? Interesting. I think it's probably going a little bit
wrong. You mean interesting? If you get bad jokes, you get football analysis.
Right, so that's the end of the podcast, JK. It's been a pleasure. no, it's... yeah, what do I think about this tie? Because Porto are... as I get a text from my GP because I'm so stressed about this prediction. I've got Porto for this. And I think that... Inter, I think, are leakier than people give them credit for. I was just looking at the Serie A table, and they have conceded more goals than...
Napoli, Juventus.
Yeah, Napoli, Roma, Lazio, Atalanta, Torino, Udinese. They've conceded the same number of goals as Empoli in 12th. They're getting through because of their goal-scoring power. I don't think that's going to be much use against Porto.
Porto have rock-solid defence.
They are. Like Benfica, they're so good at playing to their system. So I think that, yeah, I think Inter are going to struggle here and it's going to be a 1-0 Porto.
That's actually a very, very good prediction. And I'm going to say, in the game, look out for a photo of Pepe taunting Lautaro Martinez, because that's going to happen. Everybody's going to love it. Moving on to the Europa League.
Mm.
Arguably the tie of all competitions. Barcelona against Man United.
Yes. Barcelona versus Man United. What a thing. What a thing to happen.
Edges Barcelona down to win. It's at the Camp Nou.
Well, actually, no. I say does it because I'm so entrenched in that mindset of that Barcelona abjectness from the last three seasons.
And Barcelona are very good.
They are.
But you know what? I think United are better, and I'm going to put my prediction straight away. I think United will have less possession, granted, but Barcelona don't have Busquets. They don't have Dembele. So Marcus Rashford against any makeshift. They're going to have a makeshift right back at this point because they didn't get Julian Araujo from LA Galaxy. It might be Sergio Roberto. It might be Jules Koundé. That's going to be terrifying Barcelona fans. Antony's injured. Could be that he plays Bruno Fernandes on the right against Balde.
I think they will do, actually. Do you think Sancho's going to go in as 10 then?
I think so.
It's interesting looking at that because I was watching the United match where Sancho came back and I think it's an injury precaution more than anything. I do think he's got the creativity to play 10, but playing in that position, he doesn't need to make those lung-busting runs, those runs True. That really stretch you out on your first game back after injury down the wing.
I agree, but I also think Sancho's not quick enough to be a winger in the Premier League.
I think he's technically good enough, though, to go by players without the pace.
True. But pace always does help.
Course it does, yes. I mean, we've seen that with Antony, in fact.
Exactly. Now, Barca's midfield, I think the midfield is where it's going to be won and lost. We're going to have Casemiro. Let's see how Sabitzer does. I think he'll play Fred. And I believe that Barcelona will play De Jong, Pedri and Gavi together. Or if they play Pedri or Gavi on the left wing to try and confuse, to have an extra body in midfield and go De Jong, Kessier and Pedri.
Yeah, I think that's a really solid shout. I think you want someone like Kessier in there. For this match, just a disruptor more than anything
else. I think Kessié v Casemiro is going to be a very interesting battle. Barcelona's defence is good. I'm going to go United for this one. I'm going to go 2-1 United.
Okay.
I'm going bold.
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting. I don't think this match will be won in the first leg. I think the second leg is where this tie gets settled. And I think it's going to be important that... do you know how long Busquets is out for?
Out for the first leg.
But he might be back for the second leg.
Yep, but it's at Old Trafford and Frankie Dawson's going to get booed, so...
yes, he is. Yeah, in that case, it'll be... The second leg will be fascinating with a fresh Busquets versus a fresh Casemiro. Because of
then again, I think Casemiro is a better player. So
at this stage in his career, yeah.
Yes.
No, I think because he's got more physicality than Busquets at the moment.
True.
Yeah, this is a really tough match to pitch. And I'm struggling here, to be honest. And I'm really talking
just
this
need
much
a prediction.
Cause, yeah, because I'm trying to come up with two numbers. That's all I need. And the numbers I'm going to come up with are Barcelona.
Are you going to go with edge?
Man United 1.
Okay, he's going for a draw.
Do my best, James Alexander Gordon from Sport Report.
So we've got Shakhtar Donetsk against Stade Rennais as the next one. Rennes favourite to win.
I fancy Shakhtar here, actually.
I fancy Shakhtar as well. I'm going to go 2-1 Shakhtar.
I think it's external circumstances. Yeah. I think they're playing for pride. They're playing for their country. And I think that's going to make a massive difference. Rennes are a good team, but that's all they are. They're a good team.
They have lost Mihailo Mudryk, though.
Yeah. They are, and that's all they are. They are a good team. They are not an elite
Did you have Matviyenko, the left-sided centre-back, left-foot centre-back, who was wanted by De Zerbi, his former coach, at Brighton? Yeah.
But the elite teams can handle that pressure and that motivation from a team that should be worse than them. I don't think Rennes can handle it. And I think Shakhtar are probably on a par with them anyway, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take Shakhtar 3-0, actually.
Wow. Next leg, Ajax Union Berlin. I'm going for an upset here.
Ooh.
Ajax, managed by Everton fans will know him very well, Johnny Huitinger. Obviously, Alfred Schroeder got sacked. Union Berlin are doing very well in the Bundesliga. Tight at the back. Ajax are Ajax. It's at the Johan Cruyff Arena, so... I'm actually going to go 2-0 Ajax. I've bottled it.
He thought about it and he changed his mind.
Yeah.
No, I take your reasoning, though. Ajax are not as good as they were. And that's understandable because they've lost their manager and they've lost one of their most important players.
Yep.
And the Union Berlin have been playing magnificently in the Bundesliga. They've been fantastic. And I do think there is the possibility of an upset here. But if there is one, I don't think it's going to come in the Johan Cruyff Arena. I think this is... I'm picking a lot of them, but I'm going to pick another draw here. But I think this one is going to be a 2-2 draw.
Interesting.
And who do Edge have for this one?
Ajax.
They have Ajax, yeah. That doesn't surprise me too much, to be honest.
Next game is Salzburg-Roma.
Mm-hmm.
Roma favoured to win. So where... Salzburg in the Austrian Bundesliga are top, as per usual, six points ahead. Only conceded 9 goals, actually.
Roma have been a bit spotty by Roma standards.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-2. Straight. We'll just go straight predictions because obviously got to get through quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that there's also been some talk. I saw something yesterday, time of recording, so that'll be the 7th, about Mourinho, but I can't remember what it was now.
I think it might have been to do with the United League title, but.
It could be. I don't think it was, but it was probably
Let's
something
check
like
the
that.
Special one, the former special one. Not so special anymore.
It was a comment from another manager about him being a good manager of great players and a bad manager of bad players. And I can't remember who said it now. But it's something that popped up on r/soccer Reddit yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, it was by Antonio Cassano.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to set up a team. But then again, Antonio Cassano, if I remember correctly, is the same footballer who flopped at Real Madrid. So, and Mourinho won stuff at Real Madrid. So, there you go. Yeah.
Usual football tit for tat. But I do think there's a point there, actually.
I see it, but then again, I think I'm going to go 2-2 draw, actually.
Yeah. I take that. I actually think Salzburg are going to squeak this at home. I think Roma will go through eventually, but I think Salzburg will take the first leg 2-1. And Edge has...
Roma. Next game, we're just going to go straight for our predictions.
Okay.
Top of your head, Juventus-Nantes. You have to have Juventus every day of the week because Nantes are 13th in Liga.
Yeah, Juventus in a bad place, but I think they'll still have enough here. 2-0.
I'm going to 3-0 Juventus.
Okay.
I'm going to go 1-0 Juventus.
Okay.
I respect Antoine Kouambare, former PSG coach.
And I assume I chose Juventus.
Yes.
Yes. I started typing that before I heard.
Sporting against Midtjylland. I'm going to go 1-0 Sporting.
Yeah,
Midtjylland. Edge Sporting as well.
Midtjylland, good team, out of the depth. 3-0, yep. Sporting.
Leverkusen, Monaco. Edges, Leverkusen. I'd agree. I'm going 2-0, Leverkusen. Kevin Volland against his former club.
Upset time, 1-0, Monaco.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be... I think Leverkusen, again, will take it back in the second leg, but I think Monaco will give him a bit of a shock in the first leg.
Sevilla, PSV Eindhoven. Edge favour Sevilla. I'm going up PSV. I'm going 2-1 PSV. Xavi Simmons to score.
Ooh, 2-1 PSV. I'm going to take Sevilla. Spanish teams in Europe. That's all I've got to say.
Sevilla in the Europa League, actually. That as well.
Yeah. They are distressingly good. 1-0 Sevilla.
Let's go Conference League very, very quickly. They're just all these games.
There are lots. Are there any you want to pick out of that lot? Because I'll confess, I don't know the first thing about the game between Bodo Glimt and Lech Poznan.
Let's just go Braga for Fiorentina.
Braga-Fiorentina.
Braga favourite to win. Braga free scoring. Fiorentina not so much. Let's go. I'm going to go 3-1 Braga.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I'm going to take Fiorentina. No, I'm not. I'm going to take a 1-1 draw. That's what I'm going to take. I've picked a lot of 1-1 draws today. So,
and right, this yes. is the segment where we analyse a team mm-hmm. and suggest what players they need. So, Paris Saint-Germain today.
Yes.
We've got their first team squad up here.
I will have it up in a moment. As I just, I'm really making my browser of choice work today. I've got tabs up of all of the European leagues. I've got tabs up of the results. I've got tabs up of the City finance troubles and the white paper leak that came out last week. And now I'm trying to make it open the PSG website, and I'm sure that's going to go well. Oh, no, it's okay. Here we go.
Now, Paris Saint-Germain.
Is Donnarumma really 99?
Yeah, that's his number.
Strange man.
Right, so looking at their midfield, Luis Campos obviously had an overhaul of it. I can see Renato Sanchez leaving, if I'm being honest. Mm. I can see him being replaced by Warren Zaire-Emery in the squad, which has already been happened. Renato Sanchez could leave on loan. I think he's just very, very injury prone.
Mm.
And in terms of central midfielders, so you got Jude Bellingham. Don't think he's going to Paris Saint-Germain though.
No, it doesn't strike me as of course PSG will bid for him. Of yeah. course they will. But I don't think... It doesn't strike me as the right move.
Doesn't to me either.
It's interesting looking...
Let's get Transfermarkt up.
Yeah, you get Transfermarkt up. It's interesting looking at this midfield. I think they're one midfielder away.
I'd agree. I think they've got elite midfielders in... Mm. Vitinha's been amazing this season. Yeah.
Of course, Marco Verratti. Yeah. He's Marco Verratti. That's...
Yeah.
He's fantastic. He's criminally underrated, frankly.
Yeah.
And then I think, yeah, you've got everyone else sort of rotates into that last midfield position, and you go, oh, they're good, but they're not quite the right person.
Zaire-Emery's really good, though. I really rate him as a player.
Mm.
I just want, come on, Transfermarkt. Market values. Most valuable players. Let's do this by this.
It's probably how PSG do their scouting too.
Yeah, so I'd say they need a central midfielder more than anything else. Do you have to bear in mind Leandro Paredes is coming back?
Mm.
So obviously you've got Bellingham as top of that list. They class Phil Foden as a central midfielder.
Interesting. I do think he can play there as well.
You got the Barcelona boys, you got Valverde, Barella. Mm-hmm. I think Barella might move this summer.
I'm surprised he hasn't moved more. I really hate him.
Easy signing, Bernardo Silva. I could see it happening.
Yes.
As a creative spark, replacing Renato Sanchez, another number 8 two-way midfielder. I see it happening.
So how are you then playing that midfield 3 of Vitinha Silva?
Yeah, you play in Liga. So Verratti is the sitter, mm-hmm. and Vitinha and Bernardo Silva is shuttlers.
Yes, okay, so you're playing single pivot.
Yeah, and 2-8s.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think you'd probably want a little more defensive reinforcement for the Champions League.
Paredes will come back in...
yes, he will, yeah.
Because Juventus don't have the finances to make it permanent.
And then do you drop... Well, which of the three do you drop to solidify the defence then?
Well, I think you drop Verratti with his injury record, to be honest. That's always a possibility.
Then you're just going back to a single pivot, though, with a different player.
I don't think PSG are good enough to play with a single pivot.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of attack, I think they need a number nine. I also think, actually, fullback areas, they look really good. They strengthened that last summer. I would look at centre back, a nine, and maybe another, maybe a left back as well. Again, as with all these teams, I've suggested Alex Grimaldo. He's my left-back signing of choice. I just think he's a very, very good left-back.
So if I ever see Alex Grimaldo go anywhere, should I just assume that you've been hired to the scouting team?
Probably. let's look at... I think centre-back would be something PSG, especially with Ramos. He might be leaving in the summer. I don't think Vidal would go there. Here's one to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see where this is going.
As I'm scratching my beard for this one. Christian Romero to PSG. I'd suggest that just because...
That's a really good shout.
As a Ramos replacement, as a very front foot defender, I think the style fits.
Yeah, no, I completely agree on that one, actually. That's a fantastic call.
And it'd be really, really sensible. They do have Danilo Pereira. I would look to move him on and then get another sort of DM / centre-back. So we'll go into defence midfielders in here. So more of a tallish defensive midfielder. Oh, Tchouaméni. You know what, actually, I'm going to go for this one. Sounds a bit ridiculous. But Declan Rice to Paris Saint-Germain. Now, hear me out.
Okay, yeah, I'm listening.
Well, actually, I'm going to pivot straight away. I'm going Edson Álvarez from Ajax.
That's a good call. I don't think Rice would go to PSG.
Edson Álvarez from Ajax, I think he can play centre-back and defensive midfield, and that's the idea of profile of play I wanted. He's been raised in the Ajax system, and ultimately, in terms of what Galtier is looking to build, providing that tactical flexibility, I'd go Edson Álvarez.
Mm.
So we've got Álvarez, we've got Christian Romero. Again, I'm not going to be this lazy. I'm going to go back to Transfermarkt, which I accidentally closed. Silly me.
It's interesting looking at this PSG squad. This is the most balanced squad that I think we've looked at so far. I think the only issue with it is looking at the players who are going to leave.
True.
No, I look at this and I think there's not... Is there really a weakness in this team at the moment? Maybe that one midfielder.
Midfielder, left back, because Nuno Mendes has been injured very often.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, you've got Hakimi on one side, and then, Juan Bernat is a good player. You could find
I would look him to get a backup for Nuno Mendes because I think he's world class. Or has the potential to be world class.
Would you bring in someone who's sort of nearing the end of their contract on a sort of a first team / tutoring basis to try and give Nuno Mendes that last little push?
I would. And actually, I haven't mentioned him often enough, but if Venezia still have financial troubles, Jose Gaia would be perfect. Then again, he's very similar to Juan Bernat. If I get a new left back, I'd move Juan Bernat on.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
And, I'm going to do this one. Federico Di Marco.
Okay.
From Inter. Plays as a wing back. Good set piece delivery. He's at the right age to push Nuno Mendes. And I think he'd accept a place on the bench. So we've got Christian Romero, Edson Álvarez, Federico Di Marco, because I don't want to be lazy. And now here's the big one. Number nine. Now, Ekitike hasn't done well enough. I don't think they're going to make his loan permanent from Rams.
Can I just clarify? When you say number nine, who are you putting that in placement of?
Neymar's very injury prone. So Mbappe on the left. This could be the summer Neymar leaves.
So so you're thinking either Neymar leaves or we're playing a sort of a 4-3 rotation?
Yeah, essentially. Because you also want to manage Messi's minutes, right?
Yeah, of course. So you probably want someone who can actually sort of play number nine and a bit on the right wing as well, probably.
Yep. So I'm going to go forwards. Actually, you just want someone who can play across the front line.
Yeah. I mean, once you say striker and right wing, chances are they've probably got a bit of experience on the
Just going to put second striker here.
Mm.
Now, Nkunku's already going to Chelsea.
Yeah.
Jean Felix, not sure about that one.
I think that'll be too much money for what they're looking for. Because if you want a 4-3, if you're looking for that fourth, I think you don't want to be spending 100 and whatever it is on Joao Felix.
Here's a shout. Very short-termism again. Paulo Dybala. He has a 20 million clause at Roma. does well this season. Roma get 20 million out of it. Very injury prone, granted. But he can cover the middle, but allegedly President Mbappe wanted a number nine of sorts. So let's say...
Yeah, he wouldn't be an out-and-out nine, but he would be what you'd want for that...
Backup role.
Yeah, for that backup role and for rotating through that front line.
Exactly. I have seen Mohamed Salah linked. I don't see that happening.
No, I don't either.
Lionel Messi is still there, but if... Let's say PSG move Neymar on. I think Dybala would be a very good backup, and then obviously you move Mbappe out to the left.
Yeah.
And Dybala can cover the front three. But then again, you've got Mbappe and Messi. So Dybala would be Alvarez, Romero, central midfield. I said, central midfield, I said Bernardo Silva. That's my third. Left back, I must have said DiMarco. That's four. Dybala, five. And if we go for a sixth signing, it would be a number nine, a traditional centre forward.
Let's ask you this then.
Go on.
And I want to ask you this as a final push from me to try and see who you can, if it prompts anything. Do you want someone who's going to be feeding the runs of Mbappe as your number nine, or someone who's making runs for the creativity of Messi?
You want a bit of both, but that's not possible. Let me give you two hypotheticals.
Okay.
One where Mbappe leaves.
Yep. Mbappe leaves?
Yes.
Off to Madrid, I assume?
Not sure. I'm going to go a bit controversial here.
Cristiano Ronaldo?
No. Not that controversial. Richarlison.
Extremely underrated, yeah.
Although, actually, you know what? I'll say this. PSG Marcus Thuram on a free as a nine, covering the left. I'm going to go sensible here. I'm going to go Marcus Thuram as the Ekitike replacement. And then... Because if they want a nine who can play off Mbappe, so who Mbappe can play off of, I think Thuram.
And here's the thing: if you do get a short term replacement, you can start putting feelers out to any number nine in the world and say, "We want you next summer."
And the biggest up yours from PSG would be to sign Erling Haaland to replace Mbappe. How about that?
It would.
I don't hate that.
Imagine Messi making passes to Haaland.
And he would fit PSG's style of play quite well as well. Much better than Man City. In terms of their midfield, I forgot Fabian Ruiz completely. I'd play Fabian Ruiz as the pivot, and then have Vitinha rotating with Verratti, and then have Bernardo Silva rotating with Paredes. But they're very different kind of players. Maybe then I do keep Renato Sanchez. I have no idea. Sorry, no, they got Carlos Soler. They've got solar panel. So there you have Soler rotating with Bernardo Silva. You have Vitinha rotating with Verratti. Really balanced midfield.
That's it. We've sorted PSG.
And actually, do you know what? I'm going to go hot take.
Okay. Oh.
Sell Gianluigi Donnarumma. So it could be a whiffer of a good take, right? But hear me out. I don't think he's good enough. I think he's highly overrated.
I think you must have a replacement in mind then.
Diogo Costa of PSG. Porto. He would already be at PSG. Diogo Costa is my replacement. Granted, he's a bit shaky as well. Or Emi Martinez. I love an Emi Martinez shout. I think it'd be amazing for the PSG defense. So my shout would be Emi Martinez. I would get rid of Donnarumma though. And then get a better backup keeper. So Sergio Romero. Why not? That's PSG broken down.
We made it just in the nick of time.
So we got Cristiano Romero, Alvarez, Bernardo Silva, Emi Martinez, Federico DiMarco, Dybala, Thuram. There you go. PSG, if you're listening, I'd like a job, please.
Royalty checks on the post.
Anyway, guys, that is the end of O Jogo Bonito, episode number
16. This will,
yes.
Hang on, will
17,
it be 16?
17, yes. The return of European football and PSG analysed. Thank you very much to Mr. Ferguson for coming on. And until then, take care. See you on the next one. Peace.